Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwen Sheltermer, and our guest this week, writer, editor, and our own sound editor, Christopher Cameron. Each week we visit with an author, editor, sometimes a publisher, who lives in or has connections with our area. We ask them to introduce us to their work and hope for a glimpse into their lives. We like to find out what prompts them to write and invite them to read for us from their books. This week, we're very pleased to have Christopher Cameron with us. Welcome, Chris.
Great to be on this side of the microphone.
Christopher Cameron enjoyed a successful career as a professional opera singer, so he's accustomed to being on the other side of the microphone, retiring, however, in 2009. Several years ago, he began a new career as a freelance writer and editor. His first book, a memoir of his singing years, Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella and Other Tales from My Surprising Operatic Life, was published in 2017. In June 2017, Chris and his wife Karen moved to the banks of the Trent River in Campbellford. I've never had trouble believing there's a natural connection between maths and music, but how do you move from singing to editing? What attracted you to being an editor?
I think I've always had a natural bent to try to make writing better somehow. It's mostly my own, but it can be other people's too. A funny story to tell about when I was singing. There's an opera by Mozart named The Magic Flute, and there was a line in the German that didn't look right to me one day. This is 30 or 40 years ago. And when I looked up the translation of the German, I realized that the Schirmer edition of The Magic Flute had printed the German wrong. There's a duet at the end where one of the characters sings how his children are going to be his blessing. And what Schirmer had printed was, in German, his children are going to be his sorrow.
Oh, that's quite a mistake.
People had been singing this for decades, and nobody had ever really brought it up, I don't think. Some of my desire to be an editor was purely practical. I always wanted to write. And when I reached my 60s, I decided it was time. But I knew I wasn't going to make much money as a writer. So I thought of getting trained as an editor, because I do have a pretty good eye, based on that operatic flub that I found.
I believe you're a registered copy editor, so what does that mean? How do you train to become a professional editor?
When I realized I wanted to become an editor, I thought I'd better learn something about it. So the first thing I did was I signed up for a copy editing course at Ryerson University in Toronto. And when I was in that course, it came to me that I knew absolutely nothing about the publishing business or the world of publishing at all. So I signed up for a couple more courses at Ryerson. And eventually one of the professors there said to me, "You've taken already half of the diploma here. Why don't you take the full diploma?" So I went on and took the whole publishing diploma from Ryerson. After that, I could call myself an editor, but there's still a certification that's offered by Editors Canada. So I went and took the exam to become a certified copy editor. Interestingly enough, my first teacher at Ryerson was a woman named Kathy Whitlocks, and she left editing a few years ago and now owns a store called Yarnet on Division Street in Coburg.
Oh, dear. So how did you find an editor when you were writing your memoir?
I edited my own manuscript before I submitted it anywhere, and when it was finally accepted by a publisher, the publisher, of course, supplied and paid for an editor, too. And, well, she was very good. In fact, we had a great relationship, but I was gratified when it didn't look like there was very much for her to do. We dotted some T's and crossed some I's and crossed out the odd word here, but basically my manuscript had been edited by me. I don't recommend this to anybody. And by the way, it's one of those places where you want to say, don't try this at home. I am a trained professional.
So should all writers have an editor? What would you tell them to do if they're determined to self-edit?
I think that you can do both. You can get your manuscript in a good shape by yourself. Get yourself a copy of the Canadian Oxford Dictionary and use it. The Canadian Oxford Dictionary is used by publishers all across the country. It's the industry standard for Canadian spelling. So if you want to know whether there's an S in the word practice, you look it up in the Canadian Oxford Dictionary. And I'll tell you for free, there is one when it's a verb, but not when it's a noun.
Exactly.
If you get published by a mainstream publisher, they will pay for an editor. But I can tell you they're far more likely to look kindly on a manuscript that promises a little bit of editing on their part. One of the things, especially in nonfiction, that a publisher is going to be dealing with is a consistent style of writing, especially in academic publishing. For instance, if you're writing a PhD, you can save yourself a lot of money on editors by learning how to write in the proper MLA style yourself.
Right, exactly. Let's take a break from editing.
I don't mind.
Please read to us from your memoir that you've written about your previous life.
My memoir is called Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella and Other Tales from My Surprising Operatic Life, and it was published about 3 years ago. I'd never sung a note in my life when I was a teenager, except as characters in the school shows. And then I always got to play the comedy role, so it wasn't even really singing. I was first exposed to opera when I was an extra, or what they called a supernumerary, for the Canadian Opera Company when I was 16. Well, I was completely starstruck by the entire production of an opera, the lights and the costumes, the audience, of course, the orchestra, and above all, the singers. Of course, I knew I would never be an opera singer myself. I didn't have any of the requirements. But unknown to me, I was about to take the first step along that path. This story from Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella tells a bit about that first step. Cowering on the dusty stage while the chorus and soloists sang all around us, with the sound of the orchestra welling up from the pit and surrounding me like a warm tidal wave, I realized I had found my home. The opera singers, chorus and soloists, were only a few feet away from us on the stage, but to me they were bigger than life and godlike. To stand in front of the chorus when they sang was to be bathed in a flood of sound that was both immediate and depthless. The person whose job fascinated me the most was the chorus master of the opera, a lively, intense man named Lloyd Bradshaw. At rehearsals, he would dance around in front of the chorus, waving his arms in the air, seeming to draw the music out of the singers as if by sorcery. One evening, during a performance, Lloyd passed out flyers to the young supers, inviting anyone who was interested in singing to come and join the youth choir at his church in North Toronto. The first rehearsal of the year was to be that Sunday afternoon. A stencil of a hand-drawn map was attached. So it was that just after 4 p.m. on Sunday, September 15th, 1968, I arrived at the doors of St. George's United Church, still damply clutching my map. From deep inside the building, I could hear singing, so I followed the sound up some stairs and through some halls until I came to the chapel, where the youth choir, which I guessed was about 60 kids my age, were practicing. Lloyd Bradshaw was jumping around at the front of the room, gesticulating, coaxing, and clapping, just like he did at the opera. And they were singing, la, 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 la. Then they changed the chord down a fourth and sang, la, 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 la. I can do this, I thought. Lloyd peered at us over the heads of the choir and said, good, we have some newcomers. Come on in, take a G and S score from the table, basses to the left, tenors to the right, girls at the front. I assumed I was a bass. I couldn't sing very high, so I was sure I wasn't a tenor. There was only one book on the table that looked like music, so I grabbed that. G&S was Gilbert and Sullivan, and the book I was holding was a chorus score for the Gondoliers. As I found a place in the bass section and began to la-la-la with everybody, I remained confused. I thought I was coming to sing in a church choir. "What's this music for?" I asked the fellow next to me. "Our spring G&S production," he whispered. "We're doing the Gondoliers this year." We continued to practice G&S for the rest of the hour. It turned out that the number we were rehearsing was a little song that happened at the beginning of the Gondoliers, and that we in the chorus were the accompaniment for the guy who sang it. By the time the break had arrived, the tra-la song was sounding impressive, and I was feeling pretty confident about my contribution. I could read the music. I was following the beat and staying in pitch. So far, we'd sung two notes. As we broke, Lloyd announced that he would be auditioning for singers for the small role of Antonio, the gondolier, who was to sing the song we were accompanying with our tra-la-las. Anyone who was interested, he said, should come to the front. I was so pumped with my newfound sense of belonging that I charged up right away. Lloyd remembered me from the opera, but seemed surprised to see that I was auditioning for a role after only 45 minutes of singing experience. The little tra-la song that Antonio sings starts with an octave leap. "For the merriest fellows are we." Lloyd began playing the intro to the song. I took a breath. "For the My voice seized as I hit the high note. "Just open your mouth and let the sound out. Don't reach for it or grab it," said Lloyd. "For the I looked around to see if anyone was watching. "Rod," Lloyd beckoned to a spectacularly good-looking fellow standing nearby. "Show Chris how you would sing this, would you?" Rod was singing the lead role of Giuseppe in the show. He opened his mouth, and sang the octave leap effortlessly and flawlessly. His high D seemed to float out of his mouth. Try it one more time, Chris. Open your mouth. Release the tension in your shoulders. Lloyd spoke to me with the same tone he used to draw the music out of the voices of the opera chorus. For the merriest fellows are we. I had done it. With false starts and coaxing, but I had done it. I wouldn't get the part. I was certain of that. But I felt good about at least having tried. I was right. I never did get to sing the role of Antonio, the merry gondolier. 2 days later, at the O'Keeffe Center, I sat on the floor of the green room, gossiping with my fellow Ethiopian supers. Lloyd came in and walked directly over to me. "Okay, Chris, here's something I want you to think seriously about," he began. "Rod has had to drop out of the gondoliers. I would like you to take his place, singing the baritone lead in the show. It'll be a lot of work, but I know you can do it." And just like that, the current swept me away, and my life began.
Thank you, Chris. Now we'll take a short break.